the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Her name is Cheryl Wheeler. The song, If It Were Up to Me, is one that I've played on the air after a lot of these mass shootings, certainly after school shootings. The song came out not too long before the Columbine, or maybe it was after the Columbine shootings. I think it was the first anniversary of Columbine when I first played this song on the air in Los Angeles when I used to do music radio. Again, Cheryl Wheeler, If It Were Up to Me, a song I play too often. But it's the response I get. If it were up to me, I'd take away the guns. 17 people dead. The 18th school shooting this year alone, and it's only February, 14th yesterday. Shepard Smith, of all people, gave a list here. I'll play it for you because it's just because we need to hear it, because this is what this country is going through. Since Columbine, 25 fatal school shootings, starting with Columbine.
There have been 25 fatal active school shooting incidents at elementary and high schools in America. Columbine was April the 20th, 1999. 13 fatalities and more than 20 wounded. Also in 99, Deming High School in New Mexico, Buell Elementary School in Michigan. In the year 2000, Lake Worth Community Middle School, where one was killed in Florida. In 2001, Santana High School in California. In 2001, Red Lion Junior High School. In 2003, Ricori High School in Minnesota. In 2005, Red Lake High School in Minnesota. In 2005, Campbell County Comprehensive High School in Tennessee. In 2006, Essex Elementary School in Vermont. In 2006, Weston High School in Wisconsin. In 2006, West Nickel Mines School in Pennsylvania. In 2011, Millard High School, Millard South High School in Nebraska. In 2012, Chardon High School in Ohio. In 2012, Sandy Creek Elementary School in Connecticut, where 26 elementary school students and others were killed.
Yeah.
In 2013, Sparks Middle School in Nevada. In 2013, Arapahoe High School in Arapahoe, Colorado. In 2014, Reynolds High School in Oregon. In 2014, Marysville High School in Washington. In 2016, Independent High School in Arizona. In 2016, Townville Elementary School in North Carolina. In 2017, North Park Elementary School in California. In 2017, Freeman High School in Washington. In 2018, Marshall County High School, just 3 weeks ago in Kentucky.
Yep.
And just, and today.
Yesterday.
Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Broward County, Florida, in the town of Parkland, where many students and teachers and administrators have died today. We do not yet know how many.
Well, we do know now. The total is 17, but there are five still in critical condition in the hospital. I know this because this is local news where I live. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is about 10 minutes from my house. I live in the town of Coral Springs, Florida. The high school is in Parkland. And in fact, if you watched any of the news coverage and you saw the EMT vehicles, they all said Coral Springs, Parkland, because it's sort of our sister city. They're too small cities, they're towns really, that abut one another, and they share a lot of resources, including four high schools. Douglas is one of the four. My daughter went to Coral Glades High School, which is a little bit closer to my house. It's a very populated area where it's a suburb of Fort Lauderdale. We're just northwest of Fort Lauderdale and right on the tip of the Everglades, basically. Now, you know, all I could think was, Douglas, that's hitting very close to home. And it wasn't until early this morning when I awoke to find Allison just sitting in the living room, my daughter. She graduated from high school last June. Again, as I said, from Coral Glades High School, but for the last quarter of the school year, she didn't go to her high school. Instead, she went to my kid is a great kid. She really is. She was a lousy student. She hated school and just did not. School was not her thing, and she was slacking off at the end of the year. She only needed like 3 credits to graduate, but the only way to just do 3 credits was to withdraw from school and go into what they call the off-campus learning center. Well, little did we know at the time, the off-campus learning center is really where they put the kids who've been thrown out of school for whatever reason. So yesterday afternoon, I'm watching one of the local news reports, and I see this kid talking about going to an alternative school with the shooter. Here's a little bit of the conversation.
He's been a troubled kid, and he always had like a certain amount of, you know, issues going on. He shot guns because he felt that it gave him, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? An exhilarating feeling. I don't know.
How did you know about his guns?
He showed me personally through his phone and stuff like that. I stayed clear of him most of the time during my time in alternate school. I didn't want to be with him at all because his fellows are like, I didn't want to cause any conflict with him because that's the impression he gave off.
You were in alternative school with him?
Yes, I actually got kicked out my junior year and then went into an alternative school, OCLC.
OCLC.
And that's where I met him again after getting kicked out my junior year, meeting him there.
So the four schools in our area, when they got kicked out, They had the option of going to the off-campus learning center, the OCLC, at one of these four high schools, a different one called Terravella, which is one of the other area schools, which is where Allison went. And she, I guess, last night saw a picture of the shooter. I don't say his name, because fame is one of the things these monsters seek. And she said, "Mom, I knew him. He was in my OCLC class." It's where they would go and work at their own pace. They'd each have a computer that they would work on and just finish their classes. So she went to do that. But there were some bad kids. She said he was really weird. He had really weird eyes, is what she said. And he attempted to talk to her a few times. She didn't really engage with him. She just said, you know, she's a good kid. She tried to be nice to everybody. But she told me she told him that, you know, she just wanted to finish her work and finish up and get out of there. I can't even begin to tell you the feeling in my stomach when I realized that she was in close proximity with this kid for, you know, a few months, because she went, it was the whole fourth quarter of her senior year of high school that she went to this off-campus learning center. It just brings it that much closer to home. Now, I've not been out in the area of Douglas High School. I know it's still crazy over there, and so I'll avoid the area while the police finish up doing what they're doing. And, of course, the media is out in full force. It's really horrific. It's horrific no matter where in the country it happens, just the fact that it keeps happening. And here we are with it now in my own backyard. It's just stunning. You know, I don't know what the answer is. Cheryl Wheeler sings, "I'd take away the guns." Chris Rock, I know this is not a time for comedy, but maybe we could use a little comedy right now. And actually, something that started as a comedy bit has picked up a lot of steam.
You don't need no gun control. You know what you need? We need some bullet control. We need to control the bullets. That's right. I think all bullets should cost $5,000. $5,000 for a bullet. You know why? Because if a bullet costs $5,000, there'll be no more innocent bystanders.
Touche.
The end. Every time somebody gets shot, you'll be like, "Damn, he must have did something. Should they put $50,000 worth of bullets in his ass?"
Yep.
And people will think before they kill somebody if a bullet costs $5,000. Man, I would blow your fucking head off if I could afford it. I'm gonna get me another job. I'm gonna start saving some money. And you a dead man. You better hope I can't get no bullets on layaway.
You know, somehow the laws in Florida are so crazy. This kid bought the gun, the AR-15 that he used to massacre 17 people with legally. In Florida, I just learned, you can't buy a handgun until you're 21. You know, a simple Glock or a revolver or something that fires, you know, one bullet at a time. And until you're 21, but he was able to buy this thing at the age of 18. Now this kid is 19, and he cut short the lives of 17 other people. I'm just sickened by it. In 2014, there was a news story that caught my attention, and it was a young man from Australia who was over here, I think living in Oklahoma, going to college, and he was out for a run, and he was shot and killed by two teenagers who were bored, so they went out and shot somebody. I had seen an interview with a guy named Tim Fisher, the former Deputy Prime Minister of Australia, who was in power at the time of their one and only massacre, mass shooting in Australia, the Port Arthur massacre back in 1996. And they actually did something to turn things around. And I tracked him down and I booked an interview with him. And I've played this a few times over the years, but I thought, you know what? If ever there's a time to listen again, to show you that it is possible to change the trajectory, to change history, to make it so that We don't have to be scared every time we send our kids to school. It is possible. So I thought I'd share this interview with you yet again. We go back to August 29th, 2014 for this. On the line with us now is Tim Fischer. Tim Fischer is a former Deputy Prime Minister of Australia. He's an ex-ambassador, now an author, businessman, and cattle rancher. His latest two books are by ABC Books Australia, Trains Unlimited, and Holy See, Unholy Me, 1,000 Days in Rome. And I guess the latter title comes from your year spent as the ambassador to the Holy See, huh?
Greetings to you, and yes, it does.
I guess I could ask you about the canonization of two former popes, but that's not why I called you today. Tim, I'm so thrilled that you agreed to join us today, because I heard with great interest the interview you did with Piers Morgan following the murder last summer of a young Australian baseball player and college student who was living here in Oklahoma going to school. He was killed by three teenagers who should never have been allowed anywhere near a gun, much less owned one, and they said they were simply bored. These kind of things happen with horrible frequency here in the U.S., and I'm of the mind that something needs to be done. Now, you were Deputy Prime Minister in Australia. At the time, there was a horrible massacre, I guess our Newtown massacre that happened last year brought back a lot of memories for the people in Australia over a tragedy that occurred in 1996. Can you tell us what happened then?
Yes, in Tasmania, the state, island state just south of Melbourne, there's a tourist area known as Port Arthur, and it's an old fort and pleasant Sunday afternoon cafe, up to 100 visitors, when a young man picked up a gun and shot at will until eventually accosted, taking out some 35 people in our worst massacre, the Port Arthur massacre, and one which was the opportunity for Australia to take a decisive turn away from the NRA-type policy approach and make a difference under the then political leadership of Prime Minister John Winston Howard. Myself as Deputy Prime Minister and many others came on board, including state and federal governments, to make a real difference and make that a turning point.
Now, what were the gun laws like prior to that? In Australia?
They were not in harmony. They were somewhat disjointed between the states. There was no overall link of computers with regard to gun weapon registration, let alone with regard to shooters' licenses. And so it became quite a chance for those who wanted. It was a laissez-faire approach which allowed the wrong people to have the wrong type of guns. In fact, we had semi-automatics in the suburbs to cut to the chase, and even worse. And therefore, it was crying out for action, and it certainly hit the top of the policy priority list in the aftermath of that dreadful massacre. But even so, there was a lot of pushback and resistance to executing sensible change.
So, but sensible change you made, and then some, because what is it like today in Australia? How often do you see gun murders in Australia these days?
This is why I'm even happy enough to come on board and visit with Mayor Bloomberg's campaign in the Midwest of the USA, in a Montana, or in a Georgia, because it did work. It did make a difference. We have not had, touch wood, one gun massacre, death of four or more, in the in Australia since 1996.
Wow.
It's reached a stage now where you are 15 times or more likely to be shot dead in the USA per million people than here in Australia. Things have... even if there are, sadly, there probably will be at some stage a form of gun massacre, it's off a more limited basis because the suburbs have been effectively drained of semi-automatics, and the business of carrying guns into universities, into churches, allowing concealment of guns in some of the states of the USA simply does not exist here in Australia, where our program protects the rights of sporting shooters, protects the rights of cattle ranchers and others to have guns. I have guns. I own guns. But it requires simply a registration of those weapons and a qualification that you are an adequate shooter and that you can have a shooter's license. This is not an imposition. Even if we had a form of the Second Amendment, I would still regard the Australian gun laws as being compliant and successful and protecting gun owners and cattle ranchers to have guns, but stopping massacres, effectively stopping massacres completely.
Right. Again, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Tim Fischer. He's a former Deputy Prime Minister of Australia and was in office when Australia suffered its worst massacre back in 1996 and helped to usher through some common sense gun regulations. And the outcome is tangible. As Mr. Fischer just told us, not a single mass killing, over four people killed since 1996, since those laws were put in place. Now, obviously, you follow what's going on over here in the States, and it's truly sickening. I mean, it's the only way I can describe it. We have an NRA that, while it used to represent, I think, the rights of gun owners, responsible gun owners, now it's more of a lobbying arm for the arms industry, for the gun industry, for gun makers. You know, the propaganda is out of hand. They just had their big NRA convention last weekend, and the bloodlust is almost palpable. And they talk about, you know, the right to bear arms as equated with freedom, without bothering to, you know, note that actually the right to life is I think, more freedom than the right to own a gun. I think the world looked on in horror back in December of 2012 when 20 little first graders were gunned down, were murdered in their classroom, and the six adults who tried to help them. And I thought if anything would make the legislators in this country do something, that would be it. But if that can't motivate them to take action and enact some background checks, some common sense laws, can you imagine anything that would? I mean, what advice can you give us to shake some sense into these people?
It's certainly no excuse to say, look, it's just too hard. We have the Second Amendment, often misinterpreted. We have the safety checks of the Senate and split between the administration and the White House and the U.S. Congress. Therefore, we'll just continue to allow states to pass even more extreme gun laws and just close our eyes to the outcome of that and further shelter more and more into cocoons of safety and ghettoize American society. That's a pathway you can avoid. That's a pathway you need to avoid, in my view. I respect the fundamentals of the U.S. Constitution and the right for the U.S. to choose its path, but it should do so with open eyes. And here in Australia, it was a major political battlefield. I was attacked the length and breadth of the country. I was accused as a Vietnam veteran of letting down the side by supporting sensible gun laws, and I was hung in effigy at a place in Queensland whilst attending a meeting inside a hall, where eventually a 12-year-old high school student stood up and completely nailed the case as to why sensible gun laws make a lot of sense, allowing people of need and people of desire to have guns, but essentially draining the suburbs of their semi-automatics and concealed guns. You are getting to a stage in the USA where Australians should think very carefully about travelling to the USA, travelling to a Georgia or a Montana with their extreme gun laws. And I have publicly advised people here just to weigh the risk factor. Yes, there's always risk in travel, period, to any country in the world, period. But the situation with guns on the streets in the USA has reached a tipping point.
And in fact, your warning was the other thing that made me want to reach out to you and track you down, and I'm glad I did, because I heard you in this interview, and here's the quote. You said, "It is another example of murder mayhem on Main Street. People thinking of going to the USA for business or tourist trips should think carefully about it, given the statistical fact that you are 15 times more likely to be shot dead in the USA than in Australia per capita." And here's my thought, Tim. If the massacre of 26 and 7-year-olds in their classroom can't motivate our elected officials or politicians here in the U.S. to take action, I guess the only thing that motivates these people is money. And maybe we need to hit them in the pocketbook. And if we start costing this country, big cities, small cities, tourist attractions, if we start costing tourist dollars, then maybe they'll sit up and take notice. I was thrilled that you said, you know, you warned people they should think twice before coming here. But I think we need to take it a step further. And I know you're no longer in Parliament. You're no longer Deputy Prime Minister. But how can we go about getting countries like Australia, perhaps, you know, England and other countries that have had similar issues? They've been hit by a tragic gun violence massacre incident that made them take action, and things have gotten better. How do we make those countries to take an official stand and really issue a travel advisory warning their citizens against coming here?
The case is building, and it's going to happen sooner rather than later. And when you have the death on a pleasant afternoon of young Mr. Lane, an Australian in the USA, that just nails the case further. So I think there is going to be a dawning of realization, notwithstanding the worst and best efforts of the NRA. And yes, I saw some of the footage from their recent annual meeting. I think people who have brains, who have served in the United Nations as ambassador for the USA, no mean position in the hierarchy of the world, are going to have to look in the mirror and use their brains or face the alternative of a descent into absolute lawlessness. And Mayor Bloomberg deserves credit, and others, for stepping up to bring pressure to bear to turn the corner, use this tipping point to make a difference before it's too late and before even more people are gunned down unnecessarily. It is sapping the will on the performance and the productivity and the peace of the USA. The NRA has much to answer for.
Oh, absolutely. you nailed it. And again, I can't help but wonder if the Newtown massacre didn't get our politicians to do something, to do anything. Nothing was done in the wake of that. Two mass shootings at Fort Hood, a massacre in a movie theater. It's just the incidents that goes on and on. It is an epidemic. And maybe the only way to get our elected officials to take action is to hit them in the pocketbook, to cause financial hardship.
And that is a way forward. But, Nicole, the Washington Post table, looking at arm's length, country by country, just shows how bad it is in the USA versus most other OECD countries. Even Italy is better. It's incredible. That where I served as an ambassador, where there's talk of the ongoing existence of the mafia and the Camorra, and yet you are safer in Italy than you are in the United States of America, the so-called land of the free.
It is sickening. That chart, by the way, will have in an article that I wrote in the homework section at randyrhodes.com. It's also on my blog at radioornot.com. Tim Fisher, I can't thank you enough. And I'm sure the people of Australia now, almost two decades later, probably many of the same who I can't believe hung you in effigy. How frightening is that? I'm guessing they've come around and realized that you can have common sense laws, regulations, background checks and still enjoy the freedom of a firearm when necessary or even for sport, but remain safer in society because of it. Yes?
Nicole, common sense hopefully will eventually prevail because here in Australia, we reached the tipping point. We changed our laws. We harmonized our laws. We protected the rights of people to own guns, but introduced some safety and harmonization that made a huge difference. No gun massacres since 1996. I urge the USA to look closely at the Mayor Bloomberg campaign, related campaigns, and make your streets safe again before it is too late. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Former Australian Prime Minister Tim Fischer speaking with me back in April of 2014 after another shooting. This is an epidemic, and it's not getting any better. Gun sales are down because Trump is in office and people don't think he's going to take their guns away, sadly. It's a good thing the sales are down. Remington, I believe, filed for bankruptcy just the other day. But the people are hoarding guns and these shootings continue, such as the one yesterday, 10 minutes from where I'm sitting right now in Parkland, Florida, at Marjorie Stoneham Douglas High School. I'm still in shock, frankly. The only other solution other than tourism is down, too, because people from other countries don't want to come here, not necessarily because it's not safe on our streets, but perhaps because of who our president is. It's not safe anywhere in this country, period. End of statement. Another way to get at the issue is to hit the politicians who take the money from the NRA. That's one of the things we'll talk with Howie Klein about today. Speaking of Howie Klein, you know what? It is Thursday, and well, let's get Howie on the line, shall
we? Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Howie Klein joins us every Thursday to talk politics and more. Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com and, of course, the Blue America Pack. Hi, Howie.
Hello, Nicole.
It's a sad day. It's a sad day in the country, but especially where I'm sitting. I'm only about 10 minutes away from the high school that got shot up yesterday. And it turns out my kid, during her last quarter of high school, she went to what's called an off-campus learning center because she was a lousy student. What we also learned after the fact, after she got into that place to finish up the few remaining credits she needed to graduate, is where they send all the kids who've been expelled have other problems that take them out of the traditional school setting. She knew this kid. The shooter. She was in the same classroom as him for a few months.
Wow.
Yeah, which just...
I noticed his eyes look like they're very far apart from each other. It's kind of... He doesn't look like someone that I would want to sell a gun to.
No, and she said his eyes were really the scariest thing about him. She said he was really creepy. And
yeah,
she saw the picture.
And he trained with the Republic of Florida. Did you know that?
Yeah, I just read that today. A white supremacist group he trained with.
Yep.
He went up to Tallahassee to do some exercises with them, even. So can you imagine? So I'm not hearing the outrage from the right over the fact that he trained with this white supremacist group. However,
outrage from the right? They all want to train with white supremacist
suppose.
Group.
Can you imagine if it was some, Islamist group that he was training with, where the heads that would be on fire right now?
Oh, yes. That's right. They would be going crazy.
There's a writer for Jimmy Kimmel. Her name is Bess Kalb, and what she's been doing today is taking the all the thoughts and prayer kind of tweets that politicians have been tweeting out, and responding with how much money they've taken from the NRA. And the list is most notably Republican, but it's not only Republicans who take a lot of money from the NRA, is it?
Well, they I mean, let's put it like this. Every Republican takes a lot of money from the NRA, every one of them. Mm-hmm. With the Democrats, it's a few and far between, but there are still some Democrats. I'm working on a post about how the DCCC is trying to bolster that by recruiting new Dems. Blue Dogs. So they're recruiting all these blue. And I've been reading the relationship between the DCCC candidates and the NRA, and in some cases it's shocking. I mean, like, in other words, like, who's the top NRA person in the New York State? Hey, he's the guy from the state assembly who is now a DCCC candidate for Congress.
Oh,
who's
my
the
God.
Top? Sorry?
I said, oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, and you're seeing that around the country. You know, the top New Jersey member of their state legislature, the big NRA guy, A from the NRA, 100 rating from the NRA, DCCC couldn't wait to recruit him and get him to run in and talk him into it. Arizona, same thing. But, you just go through the states and you look at who the DCCC candidates are, and then you look at their record. I mean, they voted against everything that the Democrats ever tried to do in favor some kind of reining in of these weapons of mass destruction. It's just, like, horrifying.
That is frightening, and that's a switch.
So why is Nancy Pelosi behind that? I mean, Nancy Pelosi says she's against all this, and yet her organization is recruiting NRA allies. I'm not talking about people who are sort of passive. I'm talking about the real bad guys, the real, real bad guys.
Why? Do you have any clue? I mean, has there been a policy shift from the Democratic Party?
I don't think it's about policy. I think it's about they don't care one way or the other if the candidate has a lot of money or the candidate is someone who they think is going to, be right for the district in their mind. Even they don't care that these people are going to get into Congress and vote against the supposed Democratic positions. It doesn't matter to them. They never look at that. What they look at is other factors. You know, can this guy win? That, and in their mind, someone wins who panders to the NRA. That's what they think. Can this guy raise enough money? Even if it means money coming from the NRA, they don't care. That's what they look at. And they have a very, very old-fashioned way of approaching this. Instead of looking at the energy at the Democratic base now and seeing how strong that energy is and trying to be part of that energy, they don't care about that. They care about other factors, and that isn't one of them. They would, if you tell them that if you tell the DCCC and Pelosi that so-and-so is taking in money from the NRA, their attitude is great. He needs that money to win his race.
Wow. Wow. That goes against everything.
The head of the NRA, the head of the DCCC, he takes gun lobbyist money to this day, and he's the chairman of the DCCC. So what are you going to go to him and complain?
Is that Ben Ray Lujan?
Complain about creeps. You're complaining about him.
Is that Ben Ray Lujan?
Yes, Ben Gay Lujan.
Howie Klein is with us. So you've got this post going up tomorrow. How many pro-NRA candidates is the DCCC trying to sneak into Congress this cycle? Way too many. So it's not just an odd one here and there either. This is seeming like a new trend.
Well, it is, because they decided even though they've always been doing it, they decided to openly make an announcement that they are going to recruit Blue Dogs. So they are working with the Blue Dog Coalition and openly recruiting Blue Dogs. And when you do that, you're getting NRA supporters. You, like I said, these are not sort of passive people who, you know, maybe they'll be pro, maybe they'll be con. We're talking about, you know, this guy in New York who's in the assembly, Anthony Brindisi. He's the NRA. DCCC has already endorsed him. He's on their list. They are raising money for him. They're getting other people to raise money for him. They're making all the unions who they can control back him. And yet he has an F from gun control organizations, and he has an A from the NRA, and the NRA loves him, and he is their guy in New York State. He is their guy. He has fought against everything that the Democrats try to accomplish in New York, and he's proud of it. He doesn't apologize. And you said the same thing in South Jersey. You have this guy, at an open seat, a state senator named Jeff Van Drew, who's just a, you know, very, very conservative Democrat, and he's the NRA's main guy. Love him. They love him.
This is really frightening, especially at a time when they're trying to get that Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act through Congress that looks like it's going to go.
Well, one of the co-sponsors of that, by the way, happens to be Ann Kirkpatrick.
Oh, God.
And Ann Kirkpatrick, she's not in Congress now. She was a co-sponsor when she was in Congress. She's the NRA person. In Arizona, when they have a convention, for example, in Arizona, she's the person who gets up and speaks. It's amazing to people. And here we're talking about a race in Tucson where there are a number of Democrats who are anti-NRA who are running, and they're very, very good, and they fit all the categories that the DCCC claims they're looking for. And yet, instead of backing them, they're backing this just dreadful, dreadful Ann Kirkpatrick, who is, like I said, someone who speaks for the NRA at their conventions.
That's stunning. And she's not, as you've pointed out, she's not even from Tucson. She's from the Phoenix area, but running in Tucson because she's, what, got a better chance of winning there?
She's from Flagstaff.
Oh, Flagstaff. Okay.
Yeah.
This is scary times. Once again, the solution to this, the thing that we can do is make sure we vote in the primaries and vote for progressives who are running against these blue dogs and new Dems who would take money from the NRA.
The thing is, you know it, I know it, but these conservative candidates in a primary, they never will admit that they're endorsed by the Blue Dogs. Now, if you go to the Blue Dog website, it says, you know, these are our candidates and has their pictures next to it and all this kind of stuff. But if you don't do that and you're just sort of a passive consumer of news, you'll never find out. I mean, who knows, for example, you know, there's a race coming up in a few weeks in it's a special election, a congressional election in Pennsylvania, in the 18th district. Very southwest part of the state, just below Pittsburgh, sort of the West Virginia of Pennsylvania. And the DCCC is reaching, oh, help us, we're going to save the country from Trump, help us, help us. And they're not telling anybody that that their candidate is a blue dog. They would never tell anybody
that. Is that Connor Lamb?
Yeah, Connor Lamb. So Connor Lamb was officially endorsed by the Blue Dogs. He is a conservative Democrat. I mean, the Blue Dogs do not endorse moderates. They do not endorse people who are 50-50. Mm-hmm. They endorse, they're very, very careful about who they endorse. And if you're not a conservative, a dyed-in-the-wool conservative, they won't endorse you. That's who they look for. Just like Blue America looks for progressives, and we test them, and we try to find out what they believe in, the Blue Dogs are the same way. They do not want moderates. They do not want progressives. They only want conservatives. They only want the extreme right wing of the Democratic Party. That's what they're for. That's what they're about. And that's it. And Connor Lamb is one of them. The DCCC is asking everybody, please donate, donate. We have to save the country from Trump. Donate, donate. Everybody send you money. But they'll never tell you where this guy is really, what this guy is all about.
And his website doesn't either. He's one of the ones with no issues page on his website, right?
That's exactly right. He doesn't tell you, and he doesn't ever admit to anybody that he's a blue dog, that he's already been officially endorsed and has accepted their endorsement. And you have to go to the Blue Dog page to find out. They are trying to hide that. Now, after the primary, of course, when it's him against a Republican, they might admit it. But right now, they're not admitting it anyway. Even though it is him against a Republican, they don't want to turn off Democrats who know what a blue dog is.
Is there a progressive in a primary running against him?
There wasn't, and this is the thing that's coming up in a couple of weeks is the real thing. Actually, it's the general election. It's a special election, so it's a little bit different in that case. But there is a general election next month in March, and he's a blue dog. I didn't know that for sure until I checked the other day at the Blue Dog site. I took a look to see if they have any new candidates, and sure enough, there he was.
Wow. Wow. And it's so counterproductive. that's the wrong word. But it sucks because at this point, when we're seeing what the Republicans are doing with control of both houses of Congress and the White House, it's preferable in my mind to have at least the Democrats controlling the House of Representatives and preferably the Senate, too, if we can get that far come November. Even if it means, you know, holding your nose and voting for a blue dog. I know that's not where you come from. I know that's not your thing. But when those are our only choices, it just really sucks. I think what I'm trying to say.
We'll do that, but we are in a primary season now.
Right.
So, you know, you don't have to do that. I mean, people will often say to me, are you advocating that we back a Republican? And I say, no, we're in primary season and we don't have to make that choice. Now, you may have to make that choice if the blue dog or the New Dem wins, and then you're faced between one of those, basically the Republican wing of the Democratic Party versus an actual Republican. You may have to make that choice in November, but now you don't have to make that choice, except in the special election in Pennsylvania. Now we're talking about primaries, and in most of these primaries, there is either a progressive running or maybe a moderate running against a conservative. If you see that someone is a New Dem or a blue dog, you just can't vote for them.
Right. Right. You run in the other direction. Find
what you're looking for. I mean, some people want that.
Not listeners to this program.
Your listeners.
Right. No, definitely not. So this is the most important time of election season, primary season. And as you note, you've got another piece going live tomorrow, or later today, I think. Warning, blue dogs endorsed 4 more conservative Democrats this week. So you found those when you were looking up Conor Lamb?
Yes, and Conor Lamb was one of them. So, yes. So they did endorse a bunch of horrible new candidates. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, I got to tell people because, you know, the media doesn't. The media doesn't even know what it is. When they talk about a blue dog, they try to say a moderate Democrat.
Right.
They're not moderate
right.
Democrats. They're the extreme right of the Democratic Party. I mean, if you call a blue dog a moderate, what is that saying about someone like Ted Lieu or Mark Pocan or Judy Chu? What does it say about them? They're not moderate? What are they, extremists? Are they radicals?
Right.
I mean, that's the implication of calling of someone who's on the far right a moderate. And what do they get out of that? I never understand why the media does that. But they do it. They do it in lockstep without thinking about what they're doing. Moderate is one of the best words in the political vocabulary. When they do testing to see what words people like,
mm-hmm.
It's moderate.
Right.
The word is moderate. People love the word moderate. So, of course, the extreme right of the Democratic Party, the conservatives of the Democratic Party, they try to appropriate that word for themselves, and then the media just goes right along with them.
Right. No, they'll call Joe Manchin a moderate. He's not a moderate. He's a Republican light, and that's what these people are. Where's the strength of the Congressional Progressive Caucus? I know it's a big caucus. Why aren't they more powerful?
Don't make me go into that. They should be more powerful, and hopefully
yes.
They will be more powerful. They haven't had, the most activist leadership in a while. It's getting there.
Right.
It always seems to be getting there. I hope it gets there.
What's his name? Minnesota.
Mark Pocan is the new co-chairman, and I've talked a lot with him, and I know he wants to bring it into a better direction.
Good. Yes, Keith Ellison stepped down so he could be vice chair of the Democratic Party, and I haven't seen, obviously, he's not making much good impact there if the party proper, I know the DNC is not the DCCC, but I don't even know what their relationship is. Are they in concert on this stuff? Do they go along with this rightward tack that the DCCC and the DSCC seem to be making?
Well, so in terms of the relationship, they don't really have a formal relationship. It's not like one reports to the other or anything like that. So they're all separate organizations. They don't control each other. On the other hand, they seem to come from the same, they seem to be cut from the same cloth. That's the way I would put it, rather than controlling each other. And that's the problem with the Democratic Party, is that we have a party that is geriatric, and all of the leadership is geriatric, and they are very, very old. They have a very old perspective, and that's unfortunate. So when you have new people coming along, not just that Mark O'Kane is younger, but I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about they have an attitude that's younger, and Mark does. So he's both younger in age, and he has a more modern attitude. Some of these people, they're just frightened, because they're still fighting battles from the 70s and 80s mm-hmm. and the 60s, and they just have a bad attitude. I mean, you find the same thing when you're talking about marijuana. I mean, you have a majority of Americans who want to see it legalized, but try to talk about that to someone like Steny Hoyer, who's almost 80, or Nancy Pelosi, who's almost 80. I mean, they're petrified of that. They give it some... they make believe that it's okay with them. They make believe it's fine, that they're okay with it. But they will never put it on a priority list. They'll never try to do anything to actually make it real. And then you've got all these candidates coming up now who very much want to make it real. I mean, I talk to candidates every day who have it in their priority list of what they want to do, what they want to accomplish in Congress. They want to have the legalization of marijuana. But the leaders of the Democratic Party, no. I'm not saying that they're necessarily against it, but they'll never bring it up. It'll never be voted on if it's up to them. They'll never get behind it. They'll never push it.
Well, all the more reason we need some younger people in leadership. On the Progressive Caucus, is Raul Grijalva still like a co-chair along with Mark Pocan?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe that says a lot. I like Raul Grijalva, but he doesn't seem to be that outgoing in getting things done. Maybe we need a shakeup at the Progressive Caucus as well as at the DCCC and the DNC.
Maybe. He's a good guy. He has a good time every afternoon.
Oh, okay. News just broke across my email. The Senate rejected a bipartisan immigration proposal that would have offered a path to citizenship for 1.8 million Dreamers while spending $25 billion on border security. The vote was 54 to 45. They needed 60 for approval. Any clue what's going to happen with the Dreamers? Donald Trump put this fake deadline of March 5th.
No, I don't know what's going to happen. When such a large majority of Americans want to see the Dreamers be allowed to stay and be on a pathway to citizenship, it's hard to imagine that the Republicans are going to stand in the way. But we know they will. So maybe they'll work something out. My assumption is, from what you just said, is that the Republicans will go along with it at the last second, but they'll try to squeeze more money for the border wall. I mean, Trump knows that he's going to be wiped off the face of the earth after he's gone. Like they used to do with the pharaohs who they didn't like. They would chip their name off the they would, level their pyramids, and they would chip their name off the obelisk, so they never existed. And Trump pretty much knows that's what's going to happen to him. So he figures the only way to avoid becoming a non-person after he's gone is to build this great wall of Trump. Although I've heard young people, people in high school saying as soon as he's gone, we're going to have to tear that wall down.
It's crazy. I mean, part of me says there's no way a wall is ever going to get built. But I also said there's no way Donald Trump will ever be president.
Yep. And he's holding the Dreamers hostage for money for his wall. I mean, did the $25 billion that the Democrats agreed to, was that that's not enough to build the wall, but I assume some of it's going to go towards building the wall.
Right.
I don't know. I mean,
That was what he was asking for $25 billion for the wall and border security. But it didn't go. And I don't know what the vote breakdown is. I don't know how many Democrats were on board with it and how many voted against it. It just says it was the vote was 54 to 45. So the
voting for the for something like that, that means that the that pretty much all of the Democrats have been on board. I don't know if the vote is up yet. I'm going to check right now and see. But my guess is if they got that many, 54, I can't imagine they're going to. You know, how do they get that number?
Right, they had a good number of Democrats voting for it. But the question
oh,
is.
Oh. Oh, wait a second. That was the cloture vote.
Right.
Okay. Oh, yeah, the votes aren't in yet. I mean, the votes aren't, they didn't report the
votes. It's not posted
yet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this just crossed my my email a moment ago. So I'm sure it'll take a little while. It'll be interesting to see. But regardless, the clock is ticking and Congress is on, they're on recess next week. So it happens this week, and then there's a March 5th deadline. I don't know, they have a nice vacation schedule.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nothing gets passed anyway until the day before the deadline. I mean,
right.
That's the way McConnell operates.
It's unbelievable.
They just, they have that way you have ultimate pressure.
Howie Klein, we were talking earlier about the whole Second Amendment thing. I wanted to ask you about the guy who's running against Devin Nunes. All I've ever heard of is this guy, Andrew Jans. But now, according to the piece that you have going up tomorrow, there's actually a more progressive candidate in this race.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be hard to be more progressive than Andrew Jans. He's not progressive at all.
Uh-huh.
But the guy that we're supporting is a guy named his name is Ricardo Franco. People call him Rico, but he's a young guy who worked real hard, went to University of Pennsylvania. So unlike Trump, whose father paid for him to go to University of Pennsylvania, this guy worked his way through University of Pennsylvania. So it's an Ivy League school. He, as soon as he graduated, he came back to the district up in the Central Valley and started a business, and he's running for Congress. He's very progressive on everything across the board. Progressive guy. Jans, when I spoke to him, he called me out of the blue, and I said to him, so what do you think about Medicare for All? And he said, I don't know what that is.
Oh, God.
So I said, single payer. He says, I don't know. Let me just tell you the reason I'm running for Congress. I said, great, tell me why. And he said, I have two issues. The death penalty needs to be used more, and we have to protect the Second Amendment.
Aye.
I said, that's why you're running? He said, yeah, that's why I'm running. I said, are you a Democrat? He said, yes, Democrats are different up here.
Wow.
So I was, as soon as that happened and he was the only candidate in the race, I figured, well, Devin Nunes gets another free ride like he always gets.
Mm-hmm.
And then Franco got in, and he's he's very, very, very good. And he's one of the candidates that we're raising money for.
Great.
And people like him a lot. We've been raising very, very good money for him, especially now.
Well, you can find, again, it is primary season, and this is when it's so important to pay attention. So there's a list of real progressive candidates up on the Blue America page. You can get there from downwithtyranny.com. Click on the Blue America box. I will put a link on my blog today along with today's podcast to go there. And look at the list of candidates and support those you can, and certainly vote for those you can vote for, because this is the way we're going to change things. Howie Klein, as always, thank you so much. Today's a tough day. I really appreciate you bearing with me.
All right. Well, it's a tougher day for you. You're right down there where the shooting took place.
Yep.
But I was pretty depressed last night, too.
I hear
you. Anyway, Nicole, and I'll see you next week.
Okay. Thanks, Howie. Bye-bye. And I will see you next week. Tomorrow, I will not be here. I am going to the Florida Healthcare Summit. You can follow it. I think they're going to be streaming some of the panels. I'm not sure. But if they do, it's at floridahealthcaresummit.org. I'll put a link up on the blog to that as well. So I will see you back here on Tuesday. In the meantime, keep the faith. And yes, do check the Blue America page. Support progressives. Let people know it is primary season, the most important part of election season. All right? Okay. Thank you for listening. Yeah. And I'll see you Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everyone.